from the Skyline Studios, high above Columbus and Wacker Drives. That's me, Anna DeVlantis. So one problem down, we've got another problem on the way. Yesterday this time, Lauren and Steve and all of us and G were talking about the coyote on the loose, and it looks like the coyote, the one they think might have been responsible for biting, is now captured, right? We saw some of that video.
Which isn't the one that's been limping, right? At least that was also revealed yesterday.
Is that true? Had you heard that?
Well, I don't know that it is. I mean, they've got a coyote, and they're hoping to link it via DNA testing. But, you know, as I was saying yesterday, I think there probably are a number of coyotes in the area.
Sure. We were talking about this yesterday. We see them all the time.
This could be the Lincoln Park High School coyote, because it was the 1700 block of Dayton, I think, where it was recovered.
Hmm.
Maybe it's all the same one, or hopefully they can link it and then, you know, figure out that they've got the culprit and put an end to it.
Because the fact that they're out there, I don't think surprises anyone listening, but I think the fact when they start biting children and people in the middle of the day or whatever period of time of day, that starts getting
right. That's
concerning.
Very rare.
Right? That's very rare. And they said, remember our wildlife expert said yesterday, likely because someone might have been feeding him and he knew to go to humans or something like that. So we'll find out that. But then we have the winter storm watch I know you've been talking about as well. That's coming up later tonight.
Well, they backed off a little bit, Anna. It's an advisory now.
Oh.
So it doesn't look like the snow totals are going to be quite as much as we thought. Still a warning for McHenry County and DeKalb County, so they'll go sledding on Sunday, but the rest of us won't have as much snow.
Hi, it's Lindsay from House Smarts Radio.
Well, hello,
I'm here
Lindsay.
With Tom Jenke at Builders Supply Outlet, and we're surrounded.
That was sort of odd.
They love their
there.
Show so much, they thought they'd start early. So,
she did.
So it looks like it's going to turn to snow a little bit later tomorrow than we expected, so the accumulation in the city and immediately north won't be quite as much.
All right, good to know. And you also need to know where to go if you want to go sledding, too. So that's all good stuff. I want to tell you what's coming up on the show, because then we have a very important person with us here in studio waiting. Alderman Walter Burnett from the 27th Ward is here with thoughts on recreational marijuana. How's that going? He has some thoughts. Also about the booming West Loop Corridor, which is in his neighborhood there, his ward. And a lot of companies moving there. It gets a lot of buzz, of course, restaurants and that kind of thing. But what about affordable housing? I know you're a huge advocate of that, so we're going to get to that as well with him. Then I'm really looking forward to this. A local mom will be here later. She's become one of the passionate voices about kids and vaping. It's just out of nowhere. She didn't know anything about vaping. She said she thought her kid was using a USB driver, like some kind of computer thing.
It does look like that.
And she had no idea her teenager was actually vaping until she ended up in the hospital with a horrible lung problem. And it was really, really bad. But she's turned that into a positive now. So she's
so tragic. But you're so right. They do look as though they're a USB port or something.
Right.
Don't
they? They look like some kind of electronic, you know, kind of plug-in for your computer if you don't know what you're talking about. But then she now does. She knows a lot about what she's talking about. And she'll talk to us later on the show. And it's Friday, so we'll talk relationships with Smart Dating Academy's Bella Gandhi. She's going to be here. There are apps out there that people swear help them with their relationship with their significant other. Could it help you?
You mean not to find a significant other, but to help you?
When you're in a relationship, you kind of plug in what your likes and dislikes
are,
and then you get nudged, kind of text reminders of what you like, and remember to tell G that she likes compliments, remember she likes remind that it's her birthday, forget that.
Like love languages, essentially. Like, so, you know, it's acts of, what is it, service, it's
kindness,
compliment, I forget, obviously I didn't do a
good partner
job.
Might like mm-hmm. that you might be forgetting or that you're not thinking about. So that's what they say can help you. I have my doubts about it, but she says some of them work. She's going to tell us about that. Finally, though, we'll talk about trending topics. Facebook back before Congress. Back again, promising to do better again. And we'll talk about that with our next star affiliate.
Would you be upset if you found out that it was your husband was doing all of these nice things, but it was only the app that was reminding him to do these things?
I think yes. Yeah. Then it starts being like, wait a minute, you weren't going to do that. You don't remember my birthday. The app told you it was my birthday.
And shouldn't you remember
that
you should be
that could happen.
Wonderful and to
yes.
your wife?
Yes. Good points, G. Bring him back at the dating expert when we're here. But let's not keep Alderman Walter Burnett waiting any longer. Thank you, Alderman, for being here.
Thank you.
Nice to see you.
Nice
Alderman of the 27th Ward. You represent one of, if not the most diverse ward It is one of the most diverse wards in Chicago. So your area, just to kind of put things in perspective, you've got Greektown, East Garfield Park, near North Side. You have parts of Old Town even?
Yes.
And then the West Loop. You've got the medical district over there by University of Illinois.
Yes.
I mean, it just runs the gamut. West Town, West Humboldt Park. I shouldn't forget about that. So yes. You run the gamut in terms of really having to address a wide range of needs and things that people bring to you. And I think one of the things you become known for is being fair. And you're also a unifier. And I don't know how you do it, because I've covered these meetings and seen you up there, and people are yelling at each other.
We pray a lot. We pray a lot.
It takes a lot, though, to do that. Is yes. it tough sometimes?
Yeah, it is tough, but it's a blessing. You know, it's a blessing to be able to help people, to be able to bring people together, to be able to tell them the truth, right? And get them to acknowledge the truth about each other and do what's right, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a blessing when the ends justify the means.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you see, though, I mean, you have people with such different, I mean, they always say the things in your backyard are the most passionate issues, the things that get you so mad or you know, happy, I suppose. But when they come to your meetings, usually you get a lot of mad people, I've noticed, people who have a lot of issues, and they're yelling about something, whether it's development or issues with community or not enough police and that kind of thing. I mean, how do you address that kind of thing when you know it's so important to somebody and you're not going to be able to make them 100% happy? But you try, and I know you do. How do you go at that?
Well, first of all, we listen, and then at the same time, we let them know what our limits are. Right. And then we try to figure out a way how we can work on it together. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, it's, you know, you get used to it after a while. You know, people get emotional. Some little bitty things can be a big, big deal for somebody else. It may not mean something to you, but it may mean something to them. So you have to listen. You know, I have ward night twice a week. Mm-hmm. So people can just come in and see me. I've been doing it for 20 years. So I've seen thousands of people, and I've seen, you know, heard thousands of challenges.
Sometimes it's not that you have to fix their problem, but just that they feel as though they've been validated and heard and listened to.
That's right. Or listened to, but also connected to the right areas or directed in the right area. But also, sometimes you have to make folks recognize their neighbors, right? And understand that you're not in this by yourself. You got other people who have other issues, who have other concerns, and you try to get them to empathize with the other people that they live around. Like, for instance, I had a big deal at one time when folks didn't want no renters in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, there are renters in the neighborhood, you know, and a lot of us used to be renters before we were homeowners.
I'm still a
good
renter.
Point.
Right. And so, you know, you have to make folks recognize that, you know, and then now a lot of young millennials don't want to buy. They want to rent.
They're foregoing buying
right.
at home.
So you have to, you know, balance that out and make folks understand that, you know, we have a changing environment and economy, and we have to recognize it and understand it.
My favorite line from you, having covered you over the years, was when you talked about the parking meter deal. And at the time, we all sort of felt as if there might be some issues with the parking meter deal. And you said the parking meter deal is like taking Cialis. In both cases, you just don't know exactly what the consequences are going to be. And you turned out to be so right there, if you think about what happened next. Our guest is Alderman Walter Burnett, 27th Ward. We're going to talk about marijuana. I know you have some issues with the rollout in the city and moving forward, some ideas about where we should go with that. Also, the booming West Loop and the Fulton Market District, that's in your ward. So much going on there. That neighborhood is literally being transformed before our eyes. And you've been front and center for all of that, overseeing everything. So we're going to talk to you about that coming up here in just a moment on WGN. Back here in WGN in the Skyline Studios, this is Anna DeVlantis. Watch for Chicago's very own Stories with Micah and Joe, Micah Mater and Joe Donlan. Weeknights, you can find them on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock at night. All right, our guest, Alderman Walter Burnett of the 27th Ward. We explained earlier, your ward is so diverse. It's a West Loop and Fulton Market. You have East Garfield Park. You've got the Medical District in your ward, Greektown, and just so diverse, so many different interests. But one of the things you have taken upon yourself to make a platform in the city, and we heard a lot about it over the last month, is the way marijuana and recreational marijuana is being rolled out here. So, Alderman, what were your concerns?
Well, you know, Anna, you know, it's a funny thing I was thinking about when I was a little kid. I grew up, and I think about the few fights I had when I was a kid. You know, I always was the shortest kid in class.
You're and 5 foot what?
I'm 5 foot four. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but I will always want to fight the bully, right? If somebody, they wouldn't be messing with me. They would be messing with someone else. Maybe it's a little girl. Maybe it's another guy. And I would always want to fight and take up for them. And I got in a few fights when I was a little kid because trying to take up for somebody else. Mm-hmm.
How'd that go for you, Otto?
Well, you know, sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't, but they wouldn't mess with those people anymore because they didn't want to mess with me, you know, because they thought I was crazy because who is this little guy trying to fight me, right? But so anyway.
And you grew up in Cabrini Green.
Yeah, I grew up in Cabrini Green. Mm-hmm. So anyway. You know, I guess I just don't like injustice, mm-hmm. right? I don't like when people take advantage of folks. And so with this marijuana issue, and I didn't notice all of the medical dispensaries, the 11 medical dispensaries that's in the city of Chicago, you know, it's all owned by white male. They don't have any female partners, any African-American partners, any Asian partners, anybody else but all white males. And I thought that was unfair. And you know, so they did that with the medical part. And that started way back with Pat Quinn. And then it went on with Rauner. And then now when we get to the recreational part, they are able to get recreational at that medical dispensary, and they're able to get recreational in another dispensary that they can open up. So they get the medical dispensary plus one. And I was like, this is not fair that they can get the plus one and sell recreational marijuana and no one of diversity is involved. And I just thought that was so wrong. And I had to say something. And I'm glad I said something. But I just felt, to me, that was like one of those bullying moments for me, you know, where you just had to say something because you feel like people are being treated wrong. And I said something and what has come out of it, the state has offered two more dispensaries, right? Because they can't change those because they made in their rules that these guys can't change the way that their ownership is. So they offer two more dispensaries in order to get some diversity owners in this early round. Now, you know, in May or July, in July, there's going to be 75 folks, and that's going to be more diverse. But these 11, now 22, won't have any diversity. So all of them that's coming to our ward right now, and I have some coming to the ward now, and they're getting ready to have community meetings, they're figuring out a way of how to include some diversity with their ownership. They can't be equity partners, but what they are allowing them to do is to be operating partners, getting a percentage of the sales, all those other type of things in order to make it work. So all of them are trying to figure out a way to make it work since I said something.
So you did. You spoke up, and there are changes being made. Remind us how it worked. Didn't they say if you had a medical license that you were first in to get the recreational? And that's how they sort of structured it, which sort of lended itself to people who were well-funded and had big backing and that kind of thing could get in first.
Definitely. And so what happened, the 11 guys, they have a medical license. They get the first shot at opening up a recreational one at those 11 spots. Then they get plus one. So they get first shot of opening up another one right after that, starting this month in January. So now, right now, all of them are trying to open up the second one. So now they're going to have 22 of them around, and it's all owned by white males, and they're not including any diversity. And we're trying to figure out a way to be a little more inclusive and include some folks. You know, some communities, in particular the African-American communities, a lot of African-Americans went to jail for marijuana. And you know, thank God 11,000 people have gotten their records expunged. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'd be remiss if I did not commend the state and all the legislators and senators on the things that they did for this. I know it was a lot of compromising. And I think the ends are going to justify the means after the fact. But I had to say something about this initial part and to make something happen. And I think, you know, now since we said something, something is going to happen. And I think that's a good thing.
So there's this employment and business opportunity expo that's going to happen next month in the state. It's at USC if you wanted to get involved more with the cannabis industry, if you want to get a record expunged or something like that. Is that kind of part of this whole initiative to sort of make things fairer in your view?
Well, you know, I can't take all, you know, I can't take the credit for that. I would have to say the state has put all that stuff in place beforehand. You know, they had all these things planned already. And I think because we did say something, yeah, it may enhance those things even more, to make it more equitable, make it more fair, you know, make more things happen. But these guys, a lot of those state reps and state senators downstate, they were trying to do these things anyway. But it's just this initial part is what caught the eye of the Black caucus, and everyone was concerned because they saw that it didn't look fair.
Okay, let's move on to something else, because it seems like not a week or day goes by without there being mention of things going on in the West Loop and Fulton Market, this area where so many people are now coming downtown. They're dining at the restaurants. There's entertainment galore. There are buildings going up. They initially started with mostly technology businesses. You saw Google plop down its Midwest headquarters right there in the middle of your ward. From there, you saw technology companies follow. But then McDonald's and other major corporations outside of the technology space followed, and it's become such a boom that the buildings are going up, prices are going up, everything's happening there, and you're literally overlooking a transformation of a city neighborhood that we haven't seen in a long time.
So I've been blessed. You know, now, you know, some folks may know 25 years ago, this was the Skid Row. Right. You know, you go down the street, you can see a prostitute, you can see a guy sleeping on the corner. You know, you have to watch your trucks, your cars, everything. You know, it has really changed, and we have been so blessed in this neighborhood. Now it's a booming neighborhood, and the real estate is very valuable. A lot of folks not only want to work there, but they also want to live there. And there's a lot of corporations opening up. We have more cranes in this area than any other area in the city of Chicago. Mm. It's the hottest area in the country right now. We're so blessed. There are a lot of restaurants coming up, but the prices are going up. One of the things that we are concerned about is that, you know, regular mom and pop restaurants can't survive in the area because the rents are too high. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to figure out a way to balance those things out. But at the same time, we're excited about all of the new employees that's moving to the area. We got to hand it to Google. Google was one of the ones that helped to start it out. Sterling Bay built a lot of buildings. They good on getting good tenants for their buildings. You got this guy named Jeff Shapack, Shapack Partners, who's doing a lot of things. We get several people from New York,
right,
popping in and all over the country.
And that's what you want to see. I mean, and I saw a headline in the paper the other day that bothered me, because it started to say that investment firms from other states and even other countries are taking a look at the tax structure in the city and the state, and wondering if this too much uncertainty down the road is going to be a stopper for them in terms of pouring more investment. Are you concerned about that? Because this is such an economic engine for our city and our state.
Yeah. So I'm somewhat concerned, but I would say this. I'm not as concerned about areas like that or areas like the Gold Coast. Because even when the economy is bad, those areas still get built up, right? Because they can make money there. I'm concerned about the other areas throughout the city. Right. Because when things get challenging like that, the first places they stop building at is where they can't make the most money at. Right now, the places where they can make a lot of money at, they still buy and they still build and they still tear down. You know, is when it's a real estate crash, you still seeing things built in the Gold Coast. You're going to still see things being built in the Fulton Market.
Well, and you hope that the big investment dollars will still go there and not to Arizona, not
That's
to
right.
Florida, not to another city, because we want them here.
Definitely.
Final question, would you ever use one of those apps with your wife and try to like nudge you guys to for help your relationship? Is that something you do?
So, you know, and my wife may not agree, but I tend to be very charming with my wife, you know. You know, and I'm very, I probably can write one of those apps.
Oh, that's quite some mission. All right. I bet you could. Alderman Walter Burnett. Love seeing you. Thanks for coming
right,
by. 27th Ward Alderman.
Thank you.
Coming up, WGN-TV's Tamon Bradley updates us on that one email that has sent shockwaves through Springfield. There's a lot of follow-up to talk about with him and the world of politics coming up here on WGN Radio. Anna DeVlantis here on WGN in the Skyline Studios, and joining us on the phone, you know him from WGN-TV. He's an anchor, top political reporter over at the Channel 9. Tamon Bradley, also the better looking of the Bradley brothers at Bradley Place, I always say. Ben Bradley, very nice guy, but Tamon, you got him beat. You really do.
What? Yeah, I want you to say that on your show every day.
I know. Well, you're also a very talented reporter, and I want to ask you, because you know this email that has come out of Springfield, Mike McLean, the longtime lobbyist, the very powerful Mike McLean, who's for half a century knew Mike Madigan, very close relationship with him. He wrote that email, and I think that's why it is so significant. And it mentions, just to update people, it mentions ghost payrolling, it mentions rape, and it mentions praising and rewarding a loyal state employee because he was able to cover up such ghost payrolling and rape. And I think most of us look at that and say, oh, wow, this needs a lot of follow-up, a lot of investigating to see who knew what about it, who knew who was on this email, but then also who might find out exactly what he might be talking about to see, because those kinds of things are crimes, are they not?
Yeah, it's disgusting, and it's a bombshell. Their actions pouring in from Springfield to Chicago, and you set it up well there, Anna. It was written in July 2012. McLean wrote this email to top aides of Governor Pat Quinn. He was asking for leniency for a state worker named Forrest Ashby, all reported by WBZ Radio. Mm-hmm. And he was asking for leniency because this individual had kept his mouth shut about ghost workers, ghost payrolling, and then a rape in Champaign. The email does not elaborate. We don't know if this is rape in the literal sense of sexual assault. We don't know if it was money that was taken from somewhere downstate to refer to Champaign. But obviously that kind of language begs follow-up questions and an explanation. And the fact that it came from McLean, who is so very close to Mike Madigan, a key lobbyist, key mover and shaker in Springfield. And we learned about all of this because that radio station had been digging into the ComEd connection. We know that McLean's house was raided by the feds down in Quincy back in the spring, the last spring of last year. And we know that questions are being asked about ComEd's hiring practices and potentially things that they got done and individuals around Mike Madigan. And we also know from reporting that questions are being asked about Speaker Madigan, even though he denies that he's the subject of any sort of investigation. So it just shows the power. It connects to the most powerful man in Illinois, and there are all these calls for Republicans for legislative hearings, which the Speaker shot down. Governor Pritzker referred this to the Legislative Inspector General. So there will be somebody looking into whether or not this is rape, but you have Bill Brady, who's the leader of the Republicans in the Senate. He wants law enforcement to look into the matter, because if a rape was committed, that obviously is a very serious criminal situation that needs to be looked into.
Yeah, no question. Ghost payrolling, not a small issue either. I think most taxpayers would say we don't love the tradition of ghost payrolling, right? It sort of feels as if...
It's a felony as well.
Is it a felony? My understanding is, you tell me, Speaker Madigan's been asked about this. I know he's not terribly talkative at times like this, but has he responded to what's going on?
Yeah, he said, he put out a statement yesterday, and, you know, he didn't have a lot to add, or that statement actually, I should say, came out on Wednesday, and he urged people to come forward, anyone who knows anything to come forward. And of course, saying that he's troubled by what was in that report, and of course, that is it. that's all we've heard. He's not made himself available to answer questions, to explain why Mike McLean would be out, pressuring aides to Governor Quinn to do something for someone who was loyal. Like, why would he think that was appropriate? I mean, so many questions that are unanswered, but the Speaker calling for people to come forward. And what's fascinating is, you know, obviously, as we talk about all the time, Democrats control everything in Springfield, and they want the legislative IG to look into this matter. Republicans would prefer a different route, to have the lawmakers themselves have hearings and look into everything. So however this is investigated, it's going to come from, unless someone comes forward, it will come from the Democrats and how they want to essentially police themselves, right? Like the folks on the email chain were all Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does need to be investigated. There's no question about it. It's why we're continuing to bring it up. I know it's why you're covering it and so many other media organizations are covering it, because this one just seems to, it sort of encapsulates what all of us fear and hate about the state in terms of ghost payrolling. I think the rape goes so much farther than that. To think that you'd be rewarded in state government for covering up a rape, and he does use that word in the email, and this is a man long considered to be, for decades, the most powerful men in the state as a lobbyist, Mike McLean, very close to Speaker Madigan. In fact, after he was retired, he was still being paid over $350,000 for legal services by Commonwealth Edison. And now that federal probe has gone on to look at the lobbying practices of Commonwealth Edison lobbyists like McLean. I don't know that McLean specifically has been mentioned, but people within that orbit, how they were influencing state government, what exactly was happening there, and what could have been illegal.
Well, we know that the feds are asking McLean to cooperate. So, they certainly are looking into him. He hasn't been charged with any crime. I was struck, Anna, that McLean said he was confronted by reporters leaving lunch yesterday at Chicago Cut. Doesn't get any swankier than that downtown. And he said he would consult with his lawyer before deciding whether he could explain what he was referring to in the email. So you consult with your lawyers, but you need to explain, like, was there actually a ghost payrolling conspiracy? Was this rape as in sexual assault? Like, you need to consult with your lawyers? That in and of itself isn't very transparent.
Huge questions. Just huge, huge, troubling questions. And I hope they get to the bottom of it. I mean, you cover politics in such a level that you're seeing states, city officials, local county people. And this federal probe that seems to be very wide-ranging is underway, and it seems as if a lot of politicians might be talking about it. Do you hear a lot of buzz as we hear? It seems like there's a drip, drip, drip of information about what the feds are doing and what they might be going after. We'll see an office raided, we'll see documents taken, and we'll try to understand and connect dots. But it seems right now as if a lot of people might be ensnared in this.
Well, everybody's talking about it. I like what the majority leader, Greg Harris, one of Madigan's deputies in Springfield, said to me. He said, look, we read the paper.
Okay.
They are aware of all of these reports. There's all the chatter. And the thing that I try to ask every Democrat that I run into is, are you comfortable with Mike Madigan continuing to be the chairman of the Democratic Party?
Great question.
Again, he's not been charged with any crime. Nobody has said that he's done anything wrong. However, there are people, in the news, there are people being investigated. The feds are looking at a bunch of Democrats. It is his party. These are people who, in the case of McLean, that's a top lieutenant. That's a top, aide,
yes.
A top deputy.
Really close.
There's an environment in which there seem to be bad people doing bad things.
It's all great stuff. I know you'll continue to pursue it and keep us posted. I want to congratulate you on your new show on Channel 9 starting, this Sunday at 9 o'clock? You're going to have a new political report.
This Sunday, 9 o'clock, WGN-TV Woo! Political Report. Paul Lisnick and I are hosts. We're very excited. It's really hard to launch a new show. I don't have to tell you that, Anna.
It's exactly.
And our first guest is Mayor Lori Lightfoot. We're also going to take a deep dive into the Cook County State's Attorney race. I talked to all the Democrats running in that, and so that's our hope, is that we can give you some in-depth political reporting each week in addition to a longer interview. That's not just the sound bites that you kind of get in my political stories during the week, but we can take a little bit more time and you can actually hear from people and have that back and forth. So we're really excited. 9 o'clock on Sunday.
It's good to have time. And it's good to have time with you, too, Taman. So thank you for checking in with us. Appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Ruby Johnson is waiting in the PPG Paints Green Room. She'll be on with us after the break. Let me tell you about her, because I'm very happy that she made time for us. She's a local mom who just fell upon the vaping crisis because of a personal situation with her own daughter. She didn't know anything about vaping, I think she'll tell you, until it happened to her. And now she's become this extremely passionate voice speaking out to try to prevent more kids from vaping. All right, so I saw this story and I thought, I have got to find this person and have her on the show. Her name is Ruby Johnson, and she's here with me right now. A local mom from New Lenox said she really knew nothing really about vaping until your own daughter was horribly sick, suddenly sick, and ended up in the hospital. Ruby, bring us to how you got to where you are now. What happened back then?
So we were I was driving our daughter to college in Colorado to begin her freshman year, and she was kind of coughing and said she didn't feel good. It hurt when she took a deep breath. And she admitted to me that she had been vaping. And I mean, of course, I'm like, what? You know, and then I kind of just didn't think that it would have much to do with it. But over the course of our, you know, 2 days in the car driving her to school, we ended up going straight to get medical attention. And she was hospitalized for a week, the better part of it in the ICU. And I mean, it was really touch and go. Her pulmonologist told us that he feared had we waited another, you know, 24 to 36 hours to bring her, you know, in, that she would have been unresponsive on a ventilator. So to go from really having no idea that she was doing this and the extent of her use to her being really, really, really sick and all the things that they were doing, you know, that they thought were appropriate for pneumonia, which is what they thought they were dealing with at first, and nothing was working and she was getting sicker and sicker. And I was just, I mean, I was blown away. And we were kind of at the beginning of these stories that you started hearing, you know, come out mostly out of the Midwest at first of these, you know, sudden and severe lung illness. Right. And so it took like three doctors to pay attention. You know, they ask, are you a smoker? And she's like, no. And then she's telling them that she'd been vaping. And it, like I said, three doctors until one finally paid attention and said, wait a minute, this might be what we're dealing with.
Is that partly because she wasn't willing to admit to them that she was vaping?
No. She was, I mean, she was scared. She was so scared. And she, because she had seen some of the articles, and she was so scared. And so she told anyone that would listen. It's just that they didn't think it had anything to do with it. Because they hadn't seen. She was the first confirmed case in Colorado. So they didn't know what they were dealing with.
So much to ask you, but I first want to ask, how is she now?
She's doing really well now. She's doing well. She is still under the care of her pulmonologist. She actually just went back to school today. She was home for, you know, almost a month for Christmas. And, you know, I mean, we're on high alert still. You know, she got kind of a little respiratory cold and cough like everybody else in the house. And, you know, I had her at, you know, the urgent care making sure she was okay, because, you know, you hear these stories that kids that went through this are at higher risk for, you know, the cold and flu season. So, but she is doing well.
I saw another interview with an 18-year-old young man here in Illinois who he showed his lung x-rays or chest x-rays, and it looked like he said he had the lungs of an 80-year-old man that had been smoking all his life. The damage this does so quickly, it is just, you can't imagine that these teens even understand it to the level that they should, even though there has been a lot of awareness and it's sort of fallen out of the headlines because you aren't seeing as many teens dying of it. It doesn't mean that the problem's going away.
Well, right. And I think there's also this false narrative that it's so much safer than smoking. And, you know, we had kind of just eradicated that, where our, you know, teenagers just had this perception of smoking as something really gross. You know, they weren't even going to touch it. And then along came vaping, and it's like, it's almost more technology than it is tobacco. And they're just kind of, you know, drawn in by it. And if you ask, you know, our daughter, she would say, well, we were, you know, we just thought it was safer, you know, and the first thing they were saying is, oh, well, we just thought it was water vapor. And then I know that eventually most teens knew, okay, you know, this has nicotine in it, but they just felt like it was a safer alternative. And it's interesting because just very recently that's been debunked. You know, you heard that statistic going around, and even like in England, you know, they're saying, oh, it's 95% safer than vaping. And that has now been proven false because that was back in 2013 that they made that claim. And they're saying that the vaping products that exist today are just nothing like that.
Even shortly before this happened, I one of the things that struck me about you is you thought that your daughter had a flash drive or some kind of USB port or something in her room. You didn't know it was a vaping device. There's so much education for parents on this.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, I found like this little cosmetic pouch in her room. And I'm a parent who, if I have a suspicion, I'm going to be looking, you know. And I had gone in there to look for something and found a little pouch and unzippered it. And, you know, I wasn't even sure what it was. And then I saw the little pods, and I literally Googled it to find out that it was a Juul and the pods that went in it. And, you know, we did all the things we thought, you know, we should have done. We grounded her, made her door stay open, you know, took them away, talked about it. But the truth is, how do you advise your child against something that you have no idea what it's really about? And this, these products and this sort of this epidemic, and aside from this lung illness, but just the epidemic of, you know, such rampant teen usage has just kind of taken all of us parents by storms. If you talk to any parent, any educator, you know, administration at schools, we're all just desperate because it's just it's not going away.
So is it, what's happening with, have you noticed within like teenagers in your community now, are it has the awareness of people dying from it and getting so horribly, severely, critically sick, do you think that's starting to resonate and they're starting to, they understand the dangers of it? Or do you think that the usage is still just about the same level it used to be in that community?
Yeah, no, I would say probably at the same level. It's unfortunate because, you know, I mean, we're not from a super large community. And obviously, you know, so we have 7 kids. We have a pretty big circle just from our family alone. And, you know, people that know our story. And I mean, so many of my daughter's friends are still vaping. And she just, I mean, I think she was really surprised to see that when she came home for Thanksgiving and Christmas, just that she's like, I almost died. And you know me and I'm your friend and you're still doing this. But I think a lot of that kind of has to do with the false narrative that, you know, people believe that as long as you're not using, you know, a bought off the street THC cartridge, you're safe. But there are dangers with nicotine vaping, too. And it's unfortunate, you know, and she kind of spoke out when all this happened. And she's backed off a little bit just because, you know, people can be mean. And there's quite a backing for the, you know, the pro vaping community. And she's gotten just so much hate. And, you know, she's 19 years old.
She's like, enough.
She hasn't developed a thick skin
yet,
nor should she have to at this point.
But somehow you've developed a thick skin because you faced off with Congress now and you've been on a roll and you put a Facebook post out there describing what's going on. It was like people liked it like 500,000 times within the first 24 hours because you were sharing your story, and boom, overnight you became an advocate. It seems like it's just a passionate mom who's speaking out about this cause. What is it you're trying to do?
I'm trying to create awareness. We felt really blindsided by this, and I just feel like so often, you know, whether people admit it or not, there's just so much, you know, mom shaming and parent shaming going on that, you know, oh, I've got it all together and you don't. And that's not true. None of us have it together, you know, and we're all just trying our best. And I think sometimes when we share our messy and our ugly, we give other people permission to walk alongside us and to say, hey, you know what, I'm struggling with this too. And I feel like if we can do this together and the truth is, like, if you move into, you know, a legislative standpoint, the administration's hearing so much from, you know, the vaping community, and there's, you know, there's a trending we vape, we vote. Okay, but what about us moms, us parents who are saying, no, this is not okay? You know, these products came onto the market without any pre-market regulation. They haven't been tested for safety, and our kids shouldn't be the guinea pigs. And I feel like, you know, sometimes we don't all have a voice for something, but if you know, we can kind of band together and be one voice that it deserves to be heard, because this shouldn't have happened. You know, we had youth smoking rates at an all-time low, and then these products came in, and our kids are being severely affected. And it's not just the kids that are hospitalized with a lung illness. It's the ones that, you know, can't run track anymore because they can't breathe, you know, or who are, you know, super explosive because they're taking in such, you know, high amounts of nicotine. And we know that's not good for an adolescent brain. So
where are we now? They were banning these flavors because they thought those are the ones that the teens want the most. And so we're going to just keep the mint around and the menthol around, and that'll partially solve this problem.
Right. And so, you know, it's kind of crazy. I mean, I've had since this happened, I've had, you know, the opportunity to partner with some awesome organizations, PAVE, which is Parents Against Vaping E-Cigarettes. I've been working with them a lot and had a chance to come alongside like Tobacco Free Kids and American Heart Association. So we've got a lot of big players in the game right now that are working to make change. But unfortunately, the administration promised, you know, a full flavor ban, and that's not what they delivered. And what's really unfortunate is I think people hear flavor ban and they're like, yay, this is so great. But if you read what that means, it means that any open tank systems, which are still some of the most popular ones, so like a Juul is going to take a little pod that goes in it. The only thing that can be sold for those now is menthol or tobacco flavor. However, the next popular in line would be the disposables, products like Fog or Stig, which are still available in all the flavors, sold at gas stations. Kids love them. They use them, super discreet, no bigger than a Juul.
And those are available now if you want to go to the gas station,
any flavor you want,
pick it up.
And then a Soarin', which kind of looks like a little oval-shaped highlighter. You've probably seen one. You just pop the top off and you fill it with any liquid you want. There's still like 15,000 different liquids out there. Sure, fill it with that.
The vitamin E is what they started to talk about as being one of the culprits here, one of the problems with the overall health, causing the health issues.
Right. Right. And you know, and that's the thing is they've done a lot of testing. Unfortunately, there are still people out there who have stories that are nicotine only. For instance, I got a message from a woman who's in her 60s who was a former smoker. She moved to the Juul, and the only thing she used other than a Juul was some refills that she bought at a Walmart gas station that were they were Juul compatible. She was so sick that by the time the ambulance got her, she was blue, and it took 7 minutes to the hospital, and she was in ICU for the better part of a week.
Oh my God.
And you know what's really sad about it is she said to me that every time she has tried to comment on a story about vaping and share her story, she's gotten so many hateful messages from people saying, "You're lying." And she's like, "I'm not lying. I'm 60 years old. Like, I have nothing to gain by lying about this. I didn't use anything else." So the truth is, there's dangers that lie in these other products. And I feel like it's a dangerous narrative for our kids to hear. And it's probably why a lot of them aren't quitting, because they feel like, well, if I'm not buying off, you know, a kid at school or some, you know, street THC cartridge, I'm fine. It's safe.
Well, Ruby Johnson, my bet is that you are going to make a difference here and that there's going to be some changes here. So please keep in touch with us. How do people get in touch with you if they want to sort of join forces with you?
Right. So like I said, I'm advocating with PAVE. You can go onto our website or email it me at Ruby. It's ruby@parentsagainstvaping.org. And we can kind of get you hooked in with what's going on. Because the truth is, if on a federal level things don't happen, then we'll just go city by city and state by state to make it better.
I know you will. Thank you, Ruby.
Thank you, Anna.
More to come. Northwestern Newsroom, you'll hear the news from there, and then more here on Dating and Relationships with Bella Gandhi. Back live in the Skyline Studios here on WGN. This is Anna DeVlantis. 2:30 today, so about 24 minutes away, the commissioner of Streets and Sand is going to talk about the winter storm heading our way, and we'll, of course, bring you updates on what is said there and the preparations for what's to come late tonight and into the weekend. So that's coming up. Also, we will have a medical profession to talk about vaping again. I think the fact that it's fallen out of the headlines has meant that no one's talking about it anymore. We just had a very passionate mother from New Lenox talk about her lobbying efforts to try to get mostly young kids, 18-year-olds, 17-year-olds, 16-year-olds, to stop vaping. But we want to kind of answer some of the medical questions you've been bringing us here on the text line and to our listeners to kind of review where we are with vaping and the legislation that is pending right now. But it's Friday, so we've got to talk about relationships as we do every Friday. And Bella Gandhi of Smart Dating Academy is here with us. How are you, Bella?
I'm great.
You've been busy because I saw you on Good Morning America. I saw you, then a friend says, "Hey, is that Bella Gandhi on Dr. Oz?" I said, "Yes, that's Bella Gandhi on Dr. Oz." And they sent me a picture and then I sent it to you. And then you were on that Kelly Clarkson show as well, right? You're everywhere.
I know. It's that time of year where dating and relationships are top of mind, right? We're in the midst of peak dating season. Last Sunday was the busiest online dating day of the year. So it's like that time of year and this crest in the wave, you know, Match predicted that their online memberships would spike 80% last Sunday. Not only did it do that, but they said it was the busiest messaging day they've ever had. So people are in this heightened sense of romance and love post New Year's resolutions until Valentine's Day.
All right. So we have a relationship quiz coming up. We want two listeners to participate in. That's in a few minutes here. We're just looking ahead and it's a true or false, so you don't have to be like an expert.
It'll be super fun, you guys.
Super fun. So we want you to call in about that in just a few minutes. Not now, but a few minutes, because we have fabulous prizes to offer. And I honestly took this quiz already. I did not do well. It was not an easy quiz because it surprises you, the answers. And we'll talk about that coming up. But then there's also this situation with these relationship apps. We're sort of teasing you coming on and talking about it earlier. And there are these apps out there that say they can help relationships, people who are any couple of any sort who would like to sort of give themselves a nudge in their relationship in any area, really. Love Nudge is one of them. We know about Love Nudge. What should we know about Love Nudge?
I think what we should know about relationship apps in general, Love Nudge and all of the other ones that have been cropping up over the last year or two, is that We all think, oh, technology, like, I don't want to be on my phone, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, you guys, we use technology for a lot of things that bring us down. But I really like a lot of these relationship apps because this is where technology can actually help you. If you and your partner each take a quiz on some of these relationship apps, you can actually understand each other better because these apps prompt you for questions that you may have never thought to ask and answer. And then you can get, let's say Bella gets a text from Love Nudge and says, Bella, it's noon. Text Andy a compliment or something you're grateful for.
Because he would have filled out the quiz, your husband, to say, what I really like is when she sort of compliments
exactly.
me when I do something
I
right or well.
Right, because so often husbands say we see what they don't do, but we don't appreciate what mm-hmm. they do,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's like,
that.
Send him something. What did he do for you today? Because he does a lot. It's like, thank you so much for driving the kids to school when I had to do a show this morning. That was super helpful and de-stressed me. I appreciate you. How easy is that?
That's pretty
easy. To get a ping to do that. And then, you know what it is? You get an awesome result and you'll get a smiley face or a kissy face or a thank you. And then they're going to send you something and it starts to build that intimacy and that happiness and that connection.
So do you only get a half point, though, because you got nudged into doing it or reminded into doing it? Or does it kind of work? Have you seen it worked?
You know what? I would give you 2 points for saying, I need some help, and I'm going to download an app to help me. So I'd not only give you, not half, I'd give you 2 points
two
for
points.
Doing it.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Lots of points there. So it strengthens relationships. What other ways would you use it to remind you of important dates? Or is it kind of based on what the user puts in there? How do you use it?
It's based on, you know, a lot of different apps do a lot of different things, right? But here's what I would tell you, that these apps are for people that either have a good relationship and want to get it back to a great relationship or just tweak it a little bit, or people that might be starting to slide down a slope a little bit and need to get the car back up on the hill, so to speak. But listen, there are a lot of times where you really have to say, you might be past these apps, right? Where you guys are just fighting all the time about the same things, there's bad feelings, and then you actually might need to get yourself into counseling.
Yeah, right.
Actually, I'm a big fan of counseling.
We talked yesterday, there are counseling apps, and we had a clinical psychologist here. He wasn't a huge fan of those. He says at some point, if you realize you really need counseling, you should be in the hands of a professional for something kind of like that.
Yes.
So this is peak dating season, and I know that's what you've been talking about as you went on all these national shows like GMA and Dr. Oz and things like that. What is it we should know about the peak dating season, Bella Gandhi?
It's peak, guys. This is the time of year when online dating memberships are highest. So if you're out there and you're single, guess what? Almost half of adults in this country are single, 48%. So it's the right time of year. You know, I was here a couple Fridays ago. I'm going to keep being here on Fridays. I want to convince all of you that are single, maybe you've tried it and you've hated it, but I want you to do this again. This is the right time of year because all these new fish are coming to sea.
At any age, because there's an app for somebody in any situation now. I mean, it's not hard to understand
Absolutely.
That, right?
And I work a lot with people in their late 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. And sometimes people are like, you know, aren't these dating apps for younger people that are in their 20s? No, I've got clients that are 40, 50, 60, 70 that are on dating apps. So these things can work. I'm not saying they're easy. And what I don't want you to have is this Amazon Prime mentality. Like you download an app and you want your husband in your mailbox in 48 hours.
Oh,
that's not going to
happen.
Does it happen? It happens all the time.
My friends who are either divorced or still single, I find that they're they just have this bad attitude about getting on those sites because they've heard all the horror stories of the fakes and the frauds and the married people on them and the fact that it's not worth the headaches is what I hear from my friends.
Look, if you want to do anything big in your life, you have to change the way you think about it. Right? So there are risks to everything. There's some weird people on there. So what? Pass them by. Talk to them on the phone. Don't go on dates with them, right? Mm-hmm. Put yourself in a positive mindset that most of these people are good people. It, you know, and I'm going to try it.
Positive thoughts.
If you're looking for what's negative, you know what's going to come back to you? Negative.
That's a good point. Important to remember that. All right, we're going to pause for a moment here, but I want to ask you to call in if you'd like to be one of our contestants for the quiz about relationships. Again, it's true or false, so super easy. 312-981-7200. We have fabulous prizes for that and then more with Bella Gandhi coming up. Okay, back live in the Skyline Studios with Bella Gandhi from Smart Dating Academy. It is time to do our relationship quiz. It's a true or false quiz. And we want to say hello to Ray from Elgin. You're on WGN Radio. Hi, Ray.
Hello.
Hi, Ray.
Hello. How are you all doing today?
Good. Now, would you say you are a pro at relationships? How would you rank yourself?
I wouldn't say I'm a pro, but I would say I try not to mess things up and try to make her happy the best I can.
Love it.
That's a good attitude. That's what you're talking about, positivity. So
you
that's,
already sound flexible, positive. I'm digging you.
Okay, so Ray's going to be a hard one to beat. Let's hear from Molly from McHenry. Molly, you're on WGN
sure.
Radio. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Molly.
What about you, Molly? How would you describe yourself?
I'm super happily married for 16 years.
All right.
Love it. Woo!
Would you use one of those apps, the relationship apps we talked about? Is that something you think would be helpful to you or not really something you'd use?
I feel like we're already doing it without the app.
How about that?
That is
awesome.
That's amazing.
So you tell each other good things and remember to say something positive to each other?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's great.
For sure.
All right, so we're ready to do our quiz. I just want to let you know the winner, whoever gets the most points here, will get a $50 gift certificate from Builder Supply Outlet. True outlet prices every day. Check out The Edge, their state-of-the-art kitchen and bath showroom in Broadview, and now also open in Orland Park. And you'll also get a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep-dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. It's a good weekend for pizza, too.
Man, I want Lou Malnati's now.
And if you come in second, you still get the Lou Malnati's gift certificate. So everybody wins. Everybody wins. All right. Ray, you ready for the first one?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, here we go. If you really like someone and they're really good for you, you should feel heavy butterflies in your stomach. True or false?
I would say false because that's more of a nervous response more than a logical response.
All right. Then Molly, what is your true or false on that?
I would say true.
Okay, Molly says true. All right, what's the correct answer, Bella Gandhi of Smart Dating Academy?
The answer is false.
Oh.
So you're right. If you're feeling a little bit of butterflies in your stomach is okay before the first date, right? Because you're just excited. But after you've been dating someone for a couple of dates, right, you shouldn't feel those heavy butterflies. If they're really like that stomach churning, then it's most likely your gut telling you that this reminds you of a bad ex.
Oh.
It's fear. It's
is that what
anxiety.
That is?
Yeah. If your stomach is really like, ugh, in knots, those bad butterflies are bad.
Okay. All right. So Ray gets one there. Molly's got nothing, but we've got number two here. Question number two. You've been on 3 good dates, but aren't totally sure. He wants you to take your profile offline and be exclusive, and you should. Molly, let's start with you. Right? Is that true or false?
3 dates?
3 dates.
Three good dates.
I say false.
You say false. Okay, Ray, what do you say?
I also say false on this one.
Ray's going false. Is it false, Bella?
You guys are both right. It is false. If somebody wants to get exclusive with you too quickly, which is 3 dates, a lot of people that are emotionally avoidant or non-committal will try to put it all out there. They want to take you offline, and then 3 months later, they'll probably ghost you. So, again, there's always that one person who might break that rule, but in general, if somebody wants to lock you down too quick, run.
When should you be offline, would you say? What's the right time period? Because that is another concern. I hear from female friends who are like, oh, you know what? He's still on wherever.
Yeah, I would say if you've been on 15 to 20 great dates with someone, think about becoming exclusive with them at that point.
Okay. All right. So, Ray, we're back to you. You're not feeling chemistry on the first date, but you should go on a second date. True or false?
I feel like that's true because sometimes the first date people get really nervous and don't always act like themselves, and the second date people tend to open up more.
Molly, what would you go with there? True or false?
I agree.
You're agreeing. And you're both right.
You guys are awesome.
I got that one wrong.
You guys might have futures as dating coaches. I love this. So it's absolutely true. With every love story that we've helped to author at Smart Dating Academy, I promise you there was no intense chemistry on the first date. And it's one of the biggest mistakes most single people are making is if they're not feeling that lightning bolt over the head and intense chemistry because they've got all these dating apps and all these options, they throw perfectly good people back to the pond too quickly.
Yeah, that, I mean, it makes sense. Totally makes sense. Okay, here's kind of a hard one. We're starting with Molly here. He brings you an expensive gift on the first date at a beautiful restaurant. That is a great sign. True or false?
Ooh, false.
You go with false. Ray, what do you think?
False. It means he doesn't know how to manage his finances.
Oh, you know what? That's a good read on that one. I'm not sure all women look at it that way.
Right, he's a dingbat. False. Uh-huh. The answer is definitely false. Again, anybody who's trying to, you know, just woo you too quickly and love bomb you, lavish you with these big gifts, it's definitely a red flag in today's dating world.
Yeah. So it looks like that's the end of our quiz. And Ray, you won. You beat Molly by 1 point, so you get the $50 gift certificate from Builder Supply Outlet and the Lumenides gift certificate. But Molly, you still get the Lumenides gift certificate because I really appreciate you playing along. Ray, you really have some skills there. I mean, really, you think through this stuff.
Well, 8 years of teaching teaches you a lot of things. So.
You guys are amazing. Yeah.
Thank you both for playing along. That was awesome. Thank you so much.
So fun, you guys. Thanks.
And we have a 630 comment. My wife and I have been married for over 28 years. Every month on the 29th, we race in to see who can wish the other happy anniversary first. We've been doing that forever. So isn't that
cute.
Cool?
You guys see this? There is so much love in the world.
That's what I'm hearing right now.
We tend to focus on so much that's wrong, right? We just had two happily married contestants on our game show, someone else texting. There's lots of good love available to you. So whether you're in a relationship and it's not going so hot right now, be inspired that things can get better. Maybe get one of the apps, get into counseling, start to do things differently. And if you're single, know that this is the kind of love that you aspire to.
Yeah, I really thought they were both so thoughtful about everything, too. It was so cool to hear that.
Love it.
Okay, is there anything else you want to get to before we get to these relationship trends? There are new trends. Some of them are kind of funny, and I wonder if people would kind of relate to these, even though they are words I had never heard before, to be honest. Like dial toning. That is a new relationship trend. Don't get it confused with ghosting. Instead, dial toning is the act of giving people your phone number and then ignoring them after they call you over and over and over again. That's not right. Why give it to them?
Because you're just feeling chicken and you don't want to say, I'm not interested. Mm-hmm. Right? You're like, meh, why not? That's why.
35% of singles admit to doing dial toning. Dial toning.
It's so kinda crazy.
Yeah, it's just wrong. Just have the guts to say don't. Or else pick up the phone once and say, hey, guy, I'm not really interested at all, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Eclipsing. Adopting the interests or hobbies of someone you're dating and pretending you like those activities. This is interesting because if you watch Marriage Story, it's kind of what it is. She was swept up into his world, Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver. A lot of people like it. I haven't seen the whole thing. But that's what they talk about, that she sort of kind of latched on to his life and became his life and then one day woke up and said, that's not my life.
I've seen a lot of people do this, right? If he likes snowboarding, she'll start snowboarding. If he likes to, you know, drink whiskey, she'll take it up as well. And there's something nice about trying to understand your partner and develop similar interests. But if you really feel like you're begrudgingly doing this and you hate it, but you're just trying to chameleon yourself to lock someone down, not a good choice.
Yellow carding. That's what I love, because this is when people are called out for their poor dating behavior by their friends. Should you do that? If someone's like really like a bad dater, and I mean like maybe a dater who's, you know, doing all the wrong stuff in a helpful way, but also sometimes people do wrong stuff in a hurtful way. They're hurting all these people they're going out with. And should you stand up and say something?
Yeah, if it's really mean, you can say, oh, my gosh, wow, ouch. That hurt. That's an easy way to say something. Like, ouch is a great word when somebody hurts your feelings.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Kanye'd, when dates spend the entire time talking about themselves. That is 45% of singles think others do this.
Right. Not me. That guy does it all the time, right? At the end of the day, everybody that's listening to this knows a Kanye, whether they're on dates, whether it's at work, whether it's one of their friends. There are always those people that want to eclipse everybody else with talking about themselves because they're the most interesting person according to them. Not a good way to be on dates or any relationship.
Glamboozled. I like this one. Getting dressed up for a date only to have the other person cancel the last minute.
Ooh.
It's called I shave my legs for this.
For this, exactly. I've had clients that are almost ready. They've called an Uber. They're looking great. And then you know, their date will say, oh, I'm really sorry, I overslept. Like, what?
Just be there.
Right.
Be there. That's it. That's all you got to do is show up for some things in life.
It's so easy to do this. Like, that wasn't that hard. You blew it.
Cosplaying. This is interesting. When a casual relationship fizzles, only to have one person later circle back and ask a favor. Will you come to my show or donate to my cause or, like, do something for me? You know, I'm not really interested in you anymore, but you know what? I'm trying to see if you'll do something for me now.
Yeah.
Is that fair game? Have you been on a date?
You know, if you're the person that ended it and ghosted the person or didn't call them back, I think it's in pretty poor taste to do that.
Mm-hmm. Typecasting, solely dating people based on Myers-Briggs types of love language compatibility things. 27% of singles, they know someone who talked about one or the other on the date.
Yeah, no. I mean, tell me, I talk about eliminating dating patterns and love coming in an unexpected package. Matching Myers-Briggs profiles is not another package. You don't want to marry yourself, you guys.
That's interesting. So what do you recommend to people? What are the best relationships that work, do you find?
You know your own personality in the dating world and then manage for that, right? If you think you're an introvert and you've taken your Myers-Briggs and you're an introvert, well, don't call yourself shy, right? Shyness is kind of an easy label that we give ourselves that gets us out of doing the work of becoming a good conversationalist, because some people might have it a little bit easier, but, you know, that's not a factory install in human beings. We learn how to become good conversationalists. So do that. Even if you think you're an introvert, you can really muster it up and think about good questions to ask someone else.
Yeah, that is helpful. It's like you always wish you knew on the first date what you learn on the sixth date, and sometimes just asking good questions up front, you might get an honest answer.
And listen. Sometimes we don't listen on dates because we're so, like, we're in our own heads thinking about what we're going to say. Actually actively listen to somebody, you guys, that's sitting across from you, whether it's a date or an interview or you're hanging out with a friend. Listen to understand this person. Active listening is very different than passive listening.
White clawing, finally. The act of staying with people you find basic and boring because they're attractive. 27% of singles say that they do that.
Right. And that's why they're single.
Right. Well, it's important who you surround yourself with, whether you're dating or not. You know, I've always heard that from my mom. I think that's totally true. It seems as if you pick the people around you and they have hopefully a positive influence on your life.
That's right. Think about the qualities that you love about your best friends, what makes you happy. And the person that you're with romantically should be no different than that, from how they make you feel.
We only have a few seconds here, Bella, but 815 says, what do you call the people that only talk about their last ex on every date? That is brutal.
Oh, I wish I had a good term for that right now. I would say needs to go to therapy is what I call that person.
But how do you tell them that?
Jeez. Anger management. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can say, wow, that's so interesting. Well, tell me a little bit about you. And you can segue the conversation. A lot of times people have not done the inner work. And as soon as they get on a date, in their minds, they feel like they're in a therapy session, right? It's not
so
a therapy session. And even if somebody asks you about your ex, just give them a glib two-sentence answer and move on from it. Don't dwell on it.
Love it. Bella Gandhi, we love seeing you, too. Thanks for being here. You'll be here next Friday. Smart mm-hmm. Dating Academy is a place we find you. Where else can we find you?
Yeah, we're doing a lot on Instagram. You can DM questions to me. If you had questions and you were shy to call in today, DM them to Smart Dating Academy, and we will get back to you. Follow us and DM us.
Good to see you, Bella.
Great to
see
be
you
here.
Soon.
Thank you.
Back live in the Skyline studio, this is Anna DeVlantis. An important issue to get to here, because Facebook is back in the news, back facing Congress again this week, and this time facing questions over deceptive and manipulative practices. They're promising to do better. We have heard that before. We're going to find out if it's true this time or what's ahead. Let's check in with Raquel Martin. She's the Washington correspondent for Nexstar Media Group. That's our parent group. And Raquel, thanks for checking in with us this afternoon.
Hi, thank you for having me. Happy to join you.
Yeah, you've done some extensive reporting on this, and it just tell us what we need to know about these, I guess some are calling them deceptive and manipulative practices. What's Facebook being charged with?
Well, Democrats are accusing Facebook of allowing their platform to be used for deceptive and manipulative practices, saying that they're allowing bad actors to run rampant, using things like deepfakes, or political ads, you know, that have lies within them. So Democrats came down on Facebook pretty hard. This is, of course, not the first time we've seen this. Facebook tried to push back, saying they're taking more action to try and stop this deception running rampant on their platform. But Democrats largely weren't happy. They're still asking, should we be passing sweeping regulations to try and force Facebook to change some of these practices?
When you said the words deepfake, and sometimes they're videos, I guess they could be just pictures, but what for people who aren't totally familiar with what that is, can you describe that in a little more detail for us?
They're interesting. They're based off artificial intelligence. I'm not the most expert on what they are, but I know there are videos that would allow you to change what someone's mouth is saying. It would make them look as if they're saying something completely different, and it's really hard to figure out if it's fake or if it's real. So, you know, that being on the platform, people have become pretty alarmed by. I guess there was a video of Speaker Pelosi just last year that went viral of her saying something misleading. And that was a big push for why Democrats really came down on Facebook. And before they came to the hearing on Wednesday, they did announce a policy that they would be removing deepfakes from their platform. So Democrats and Republicans both applauded them for that, because that was something I guess both parties had a consensus on about what they wanted Facebook to do.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's a very difficult area to navigate. And I actually shouldn't say too many bad things about Facebook on this, because I think it is hard to make sure that you have an open platform that's not censored, but it allows free thought from all areas of the political spectrum, all people of different backgrounds and interests to be able to express themselves, because that's what it is. But without going too far and offending people in a really horrible way, or shaming people, I guess would be an example of that, or you know, bullying people. We've seen plenty of examples of teenagers being just relentlessly bullied over their platform. But this has to do with political ads. And I know a lot of times political ads do involve things that aren't necessarily fact-checked. And that's just kind of how they've always been. And when we see them on television here, we see them all over the place, that they'll make claims and they play that sinister music and they show a terrible picture of their opponent and how horrible they are. And they'll make claims that aren't necessarily true. I just don't know how Facebook goes in there and actually vets every single one of these and decides or determines what crosses the line.
Right. And they've already gotten backlash from doing that on just posts, removing things and removing certain people they find as extremists online. I know Republicans specifically came down hard on Facebook over, you know, taking out some conservative voices on Facebook. So I think that's why we're seeing this week Facebook saying we're not even going to get involved. I think they just don't want to put themselves at the center of any further controversy. Still, inevitably, they are, by saying they're not going to police these political ads. And it's going to be interesting if lawmakers decide to take any sort of, I guess, legislative action to force that. But we're now in an election year. The likelihood of that is extremely low, I would say. But there, I guess, that is bubbling here on Capitol Hill, because I don't think it came up during Thursday's hearing, but rather after through a statement. And Facebook declared that they were not going to go ahead and police these ads. But like you pointed out, if this was a television ad, there are certain rules and guidelines that you have to abide by. And that was kind of some of the things they touched on at the hearing, is that, you know, more and more we're going to a virtual digital age, and more of life is happening online. So to just leave it unregulated, some Democrats are arguing, just it doesn't make much sense moving forward.
And let's face it, social media platforms are a big part of every successful campaign, just about any successful campaign these days. And you're seeing some other social media platforms like Twitter say, we're not going to even have a piece of it at all. We're just backing off. We're not going to allow any political ads because we don't want to have to be policing them and following any kind of guidelines or setting any kind of rules. But Facebook seems here to be asking the government to step in and say, you provide some rules if you think we're not doing a good job, and we'll try to follow them. How is that going to get any traction?
I would assume there would be further hearings on something like that. I haven't seen any legislation that kind of meets the middle ground. And just watching Wednesday's hearing, Republicans and Democrats don't seem to be on the same page with regulatory action. I know a lot of conservative Republicans are pretty apprehensive given, like I was mentioning before, some of the policies Facebook put forward before that they think hurt their party more than Democrats. They believe that Facebook had a liberal bias and was inherently suppressing liberal or conservative news. Mm-hmm. So I just think they're taking a more wary step forward, and I know even a Republican from, I believe, Indiana, Representative Bouchon, was saying, you know, if we are going to move forward, can we find a tool where, you know, you something got taken down and you want to, as a some a user, an everyday user, wants to file a complaint against Facebook or wants to contest that, there should be a tool. So I think there might be some traction, some middle ground that, you know, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are trying to find, but nothing concretely has been put forward in a bipartisan way that I've seen that shows a clear road forward to figuring this out in this election year with November, you know, going to just come very soon.
Yeah, these questions aren't, I mean, they're not entirely new for Facebook. They've gone through this time after time. They had terror propaganda that they had to remove after ISIS was posting recruitment videos. They went through that. Yeah. They had hate speech. They developed rules for that, violence threats, or if you're trying to threaten somebody or child exploitation too. They go after a lot of that. So they have armies of people who kind of go through their content, right, and try to find this stuff.
Right, which is why they were pretty defensive at some of the accusations during Wednesday's hearing, saying, you know, we have even gone from a reactive platform to a proactive as far as, you know, trying to remove content that is harmful from our website. And they seemed, you know, they say after, you know, several years of this being brought to their attention that they are on a path to making the platform a more healthy, I guess, environment. Mm-hmm. But, it, you know, the criticism is still out there. The debate is still out there. And we saw it on Wednesday just between the panelists and who were experts in technology and lawmakers who are still seeing, you know, these posts. There's millions or thousands of posts to police. And I know Facebook is still struggling to get them all down and to make it a platform that is actually productive in some sense.
Right, right. Fascinating interview you had in your piece was quote there from it. We have a Pentagon to protect our physical borders. We don't have a Pentagon to protect our digital borders. And so it seems that more and more people are calling and understanding the sheer power of these technology platforms, of these social media platforms, and saying there you might need to take it, whether it's this political ad issue or not. There's all kinds of data issues, too. I don't know if you saw in California, every state gets new laws on January 1st. The one that a lot of states are looking at now is this law out of California that says people who use social media platforms, wherever, anything online, they're allowed to know what data is being collected about them, either before or during the collection, and give you an overview of the types of businesses that they're sharing that data with. Then they went even farther. It'll be interesting to see how this actually works in practice. Mm-hmm. But they went even farther to say, at a customer's request or a user's request, the company must then reveal the types of personal data it has on you. So if you, I guess in California now, if you called Facebook or emailed Facebook and said, hey, I want to know what data that you have on me, they would be required to turn that over to you.
Well, I hadn't heard of that. That'll be interesting to see if how that goes and if Congress will take note and want to take a similar action. Because I know just based on the testimony I'm hearing, lawmakers are highly concerned. I know Representative Debbie Dingell in particular was less worried about, you know, just opinions and disinformation, but rather the privacy aspect, citing the Cambridge Analytica scandal in particular, and still trying to hold Facebook accountable. I know Facebook has, you know, accepted responsibility for that particular incident and their involvement, but it'll be interesting given California's more aggressive action if, you know, the federal government will take note and want to take a similar stance, because I think that is a less partisan debate than what we're seeing when it comes to disinformation online.
Huge issue. Raquel Martin, Washington correspondent for Nexstar Media Group, thank you so much for checking in with us on this very important issue. Thanks. Thanks, Raquel.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Have a good afternoon. Trending topics coming up here on WGN Radio next. Time for Trending Topics. This is Anna DeVlantis along with Steve Bertrand, and Lauren Lapka is here. And we must begin with a coyote update. Mm-hmm. Because you walked in the studio and said, yeah, we have one.
The Chicago Scanner account is saying that there was a call about a coyote running southbound on the grass near Belbo and Lakeshore Drive towards the museum. So maybe trying to get a little culture experience before getting possibly caught like the other one from last night.
Steve, does this strike you as strange that they're out in the day? It doesn't. No.
Sorry, no, it doesn't. I've seen them in the day. Again, I live in Deerfield,
right?
So but in the middle of it, like in a neighborhood, not in a rural area by any means.
Sure.
And they run through my backyard. Mm-hmm. I've seen them in the daytime. So
downtown, I don't ever remember seeing them during the day.
The real question is,
mostly at dusk and late night.
There are reports that police have planted DNA evidence on this coyote that they caught.
Oh. They're going to sue it.
Don't start things. Do not start. We do not need that kind of headline here in Chicago.
I mean, I'm really surprised by that, but
they'll
close the case, yeah.
They're checking the DNA, though,
I guess.
Of this coyote is what I heard.
I've seen pictures of the one they caught in the cage right now from being caught last night. It looks so sad and scared.
They do.
I feel bad because, again, you know, it's just trying to survive. Mm-hmm. And you, as a city, long ago, we came into their area.
Right,
so,
the prairies were certainly places where coyotes roamed.
But again, coyotes weren't here 30 years ago or 20 years ago. They've come back. You know, they weren't.
Well, just in general, people,
their population.
Yeah, were taking over their areas. Where are they supposed to go?
For the most part, we said this before. We had the wildlife expert on yesterday. For the most part, they're kind of doing their thing, and we're doing our things. It became alarming when it started attacking a young boy and potentially another man.
But where are they getting the DNA evidence? Is from the
child?
I guess they wiped the wound. They wiped the wound of the boy. They get the DNA from the saliva, and then they're going to check the DNA.
They will
of
very
the
publicly put
very
the dog
scientific.
Down. I mean,
I don't know,
right?
Well,
that's
usually
might
you
be a
euthanize
bad
any
that
animal that's attacked a human because once they do it, the thought process is that they're going to continue to attack humans because one, they either associate them with food or they just think they're now predators.
Ends better for the gator.
It did. He got a nice little refuge, Chance the Snapper, in Florida.
Mm-hmm, right.
We've had him, you know, the alligator catcher on with us, Frank Robb, and he's talked about how he's the highlight. You walk into that refuge and you see Chance right there in the front, and he's like, he's got the whole world there, and he's in Florida, which is where gators kind of belong, not in the lagoon, right? Mm-hmm. Like we saw it.
Don't feed the animals.
Please don't.
It's generally a good rule. All right, so here are a couple of things we want to get to. The Girl Scouts will be knocking at your door pretty soon.
Yes.
Do they still knock at the door, or do all the Girl Scouts now
just send their
parents to work with their fill-out cards?
Or outside of big grocery stores.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I used to go door-to-door, and I always thought it was cruel that they did the cookie thing in the January and February.
I never thought about that,
I used to get so mad because we would go out. It'd be so cold. Yeah. We'd sell like 5 boxes.
Interesting. You think you'd get the guilt factor, like, oh, I feel really bad for you. I'd feel really guilty if I didn't buy your cookies.
It rarely worked.
When I was a kid, my baseball league, the Manteno Baseball League, would have a candy sale. Oh. And so, but all the players, the kids would get the candy at the same time, and then you'd load up your bike and race to the blocks because everyone went door to door.
I'm getting this house first.
It was a small town. There was very limited opportunities.
Not many customers.
Right.
So you had to go to, especially the people you knew that were going to, you know, kind of really
put them on reserve.
Yeah,
exactly.
Take care of you. So here's the deal. This year, they've got a new cookie for the Girl Scouts, Lemon Ups. It's a crispy lemon cookie baked with 8 messages inspired by Girl Scout entrepreneurs like, I'm a go-getter, I'm an innovator. So they have little messages with the cookie, a message of positivity with
I'm
your cookie.
I'm a go-getter, and her mom is selling the cookies at the office.
That is not. Then you're not an entrepreneur or an innovator or a go-getter. You got to be out there in the cold, knocking on doors like I was in order to prove that. This is really interesting, too. One sidebar on this. The Washington Post actually reviewed the lemon cookie, and the food critic wrote, delivered a decidedly underwhelming dose of lemon. Pretty generic. Like, do you have to really beat up on the Girl Scout cookie? I mean, really? Was that necessary?
Okay, just stick to your thing.
I'm
going to
buy them anyway.
It's
like, what? That's not good territory. All right, this is a great headline. Giving birth in America now costs more than a woman earns in a month. Cost of giving birth in America skyrocketed in recent years. Major study looking at women with employer-provided health insurance found that the average new mom spent $4,500 out-of-pocket to give birth. That's out-of-pocket with insurance. And then it's gone up. That was 17, and then there's a 50% increase in 17. So, I mean, in 18. So it's really going up, the cost.
That's surprising to me. With insurance, of course, it's everyone, so it could be really bad insurance plans too, but that they're out-of-pocket $4,500.
It could be the high-deductible plans factored in there, but still, a really kind of alarming average, right? Wouldn't you say? All right, how's this for a why didn't I think of that idea? How about an ATM for college students that serves pizza? Ooh. On college campuses. So it's this machine that makes a pizza at the press of a button. What you have to do is you just go in and you select which pizza you want, and you can select the little toppings. You do that. And then the pizza then boxes it up, makes it for you, cooks it in the little machine, and then boxes it for you, and then drops it in a refrigerated compartment.
How long does it take, I wonder?
I don't know. I think you can pick it up. I wonder if it's app-controlled or not, because it's in a refrigerated compartment.
So it doesn't cook it. It's
let's
not
see.
Cooked.
Wait, let's see. It contains pre-cooked pizzas. You're right. That's pre-cooked. The key. Very good. Pre-cooked pizzas. And then the toppings are all added. It's all boxed up for you. You pick it up.
Huh.
Well, no one can see this but you guys. My daughter sent me a picture. She lives in L.A. and she's working in L.A. of a Postmates robot going down the street delivering packages.
So they do. We were talking about that on the show yesterday. So it delivers packages.
Yeah, it's just a little, looks like a little bicycle, you know, like a tricycle with something on it, and it's just going down the sidewalk.
So now porch pirates won't just take your boxes, they'll take your robots?
Your robots, yeah.
Okay.
I have never seen one of those. That is so cool.
That is pretty neat, yeah.
Isn't it? It just tells you, like, the future of the package delivery stuff. It's very cool.
I told her to lay down in front of one, and we'll sue the company.
Oh, good job, Steve. That's great advice for a child.
But doesn't it work like a Roomba? It's like, there's an obstacle there.
Right. it would probably take a few tries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I would think so. I would think so. Lose fat in your tongue to improve sleep apnea. How about this one? It's trending and really weird, but it's true according to studies. If you're one of the 1 billion people globally who suffer from obstructive sleep apnea, having a fat tongue could be the key reason why you snore, choke, gasp, or stop breathing periodically through the night. So how do you trim down your tongue is the question. The new study found you can trim down your fatty tongue as you lose overall body fat. So you go on a diet and you lose the tongue.
So heavy people have fatter tongues?
I think that's what they're saying here.
I think it was just a pure muscle.
They use MRI imaging to measure the effect of upper airways of a 10% weight loss in 67 obese patients. And they found that sleep apnea scores improved by 31%.
Because they do say the heavier you are, the more likely you are to have sleep apnea, right? So maybe that's where it comes
from. That's interesting. I never would have thought that your tongue could gain fat.
Some plastic surgeon's trying to come up with a lipo tongue right now.
Really? Right. We'll see that ad pretty soon. Maybe you take it out of...
I'm going to cut off the bitter taste buds, yeah.
Take it out of that part of your body and put it somewhere else.
I'd like to make the hourglass figure on my tongue, just trying to look really nice.
Yeah, kind of shape it the way you want it once you're in there doing the surgery.
Random.
Oh my gosh, what is happening, people? All right, so then we also have this. Did you guys hear the story? And I'm sure you both did, actually. The rideshare drivers, they were fake and they were posing.
Yes.
Ezra, I think this is such an interesting story to me because you think about how easy it is and how easy it would be to fall for it. Because you think about, you're always looking on your phone and you're clearly moving out toward the edge of the pavement, and then you're looking down the road and you're obviously looking toward the cars that are coming down the street. It's clear that you're a rideshare person. If you don't check the license plate.
But yeah, who wouldn't? I don't get that. Why you wouldn't do that?
And I think just sometimes if you're in a rush or there's a lot on your mind, it's easy to get distracted. Or if you have had I'm usually really good about always looking at the license plate, making sure the make and model of the car is exact, asking for sure if they're there to pick up me. But I even had a moment.
You have to be careful how you do that, right? Because if you say, "Hey, are you Frank?"
Right.
They'll just say, "Yeah,
yes,
I'm Frank."
I am.
Right.
Well, because even I had a moment a week ago, and I started approaching a car because I had my head down. They stopped right in front of me. There was no one else by me, so it would make the most sense that it would be my ride. And I pulled up, and I was like, "Wait, no, you're not the person I'm looking for." And they're like, "Oh no, it's okay. I'll take you where you need to go." And I was like,
"Oh, so there you
no."
Go.
They're like, "Really? It's not a problem. I'm an Uber driver." I was like, "No," and I like backed up into towards the building that I was standing by.
So you could have been one of the victims.
Yes.
Maybe. Wow.
I should have really.
Did it look
like
that person was kind of trolling to pick people up, or did it just seem
so
accidental?
Not focused before that whole experience happened, and then I was on alert after that. But I
you know, where I was, I couldn't really see where they were going after that. So it was hard to say.
We just have a few seconds here, but Uber has rolled out a solution that starts next week. All passengers in the U.S. and Canada. Tell me what you think about this. They're basically saying you can come up with a PIN code, and when you get into the rideshare, you reveal the PIN code. And I think that's backwards. The driver should have to say the PIN code to you.
Right.
I mean, how easy would it be to say, are you Frank, or to say, are you number 1234, my PIN code? And the driver says, yes, that's what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. You'd need the driver to read back the PIN code.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. I just know that I'm glad you can opt out of it, right? You don't have to do it. So
no, you don't have to.
Right.
You can opt into it, too. And then there's the Uber has the emergency buttons as well. Right. They're trying to get ahead of this, but it's hard.
It's all GPS-based. Why can't they connect you and your phone to their phone right when you get picked up and say, okay, yes, this is the right person
or something.
Yeah, like a big check mark pops up. All right, you're good to go. Hop in.
Is this your car?
Like that. Yeah.
I don't know. There seems to be that extra piece that might be needed here, although the word should just be out. You got to check that license plate, right, in order to be safe.
Yes.
All right, and that's going to do it for trending topics right now, and we're going to check in with Ro Khan in Studio A coming up to see what he has on his show, and then after that, the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. So stay with us.